You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Two podcasts in 1 week. We are back, and we are back on schedule, more importantly.
Yeah.
This is episode 65 of our podcast. My name is Dave, and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello, hello.
And Jay.
Good evening.
Who is head deep in the munition, what's it called? Munition field manual.
Munitorium field manual.
Yeah, I was just checking to see whether Matt's favourite unit, the Tau Supremacy suit, has gone up in points cost.
Like, I can't believe it. I thought it was a typo last year, but it's still the same cost.
Same cost. So it must not have been a typo. It's deliberate.
Why?
Madness.
Absolutely. How many drones can you get in a 2,000 point list with a Tau Supremacy suit? Shield drones, yeah. You'd never take it down.
No.
You'd hit it with a volcano cannon. Oh, 5+, I've saved it on the drones.
The problem is, though, you would never capture any objectives.
You wouldn't need to. I'd just stand there blasting you with all the guns. And then my drones will go off everywhere and capture objectives.
Magnus is just mortal wounded to death. Hasn't got a mortal wound save, has it?
It has, yeah, because when the drones are there, it just...
Yeah, well, Super Smite will get
rid
of those.
And then, you know, it doesn't. It just gets rid of one of them.
I feel like we're going slightly onto the chapter of proof chat. Spoiler alert, we're going to be talking about the new chapter.
I've had an idea. My Tau Supremacy suit, I'm going to rebase it standing on Magnus. Magnus into the ground.
And then you may as well buy a second one while you're there.
Well, yeah, you can almost fit two of them in 2,000 points.
But you need a third super heavy then, wouldn't you?
No, just take two Blood Wars.
You don't need command points when you've got two Supremacy suits.
Right. So, yes, later on in the podcast, our feature this week, seeing as we were busy talking about Sister Battle last week, we didn't really talk about the latest chapter approved, which is now out. So we're going to talk about this week, the new missions and revised missions in the book, have a quick glance at the points changes and all the cool stuff that's within the book. I bought my copy, but I've not really had a chance to flick through it much, so I might be relying... a lot on Matt. I hope you've read it.
Yeah, it's a cool bit in there.
So cool.
That's not all though, Dave.
No, that is not everything. We've also got... Sorry, Matt, were you going to say something?
We're going to be looking back over the entire year of everything that's come out from Games Workshop.
Yes, we are. We've also got our top three books of this year. Not Black Library. We're referring to Battle Tomes, Codexes,
Rulebooks,
supplements,
expansions, all that stuff.
All that kind of stuff. And of course, we've got all the general news as well, which is a little bit quieter this week. But you know, we've got to have a break at some point.
We've got it, yeah. And this is our week.
Thanks, G-Dubs. So before all of that, I know it's only been a few days since the last recording.
I've lost track of time, to be honest.
Yeah, but I'm sure most of us have done a little bit of hobbying.
I've done some hobbying.
Have you?
Yeah, well, hobby in a fashion.
Go on.
In a sense. Do you want me to start with my hobby update?
Yes, you can.
So I have a new hobby room.
Oh.
Because I've moved house. So I have spent some free time, and I've not had much free time since the last podcast, sorting out my hobby room. Getting everything ready to put all my armies back on display, to get my gaming area set up again, giving some thought to my painting area. So I am ready and rearing to go. I was actually going to come... Dave's actually got my paints out at the moment. I was going to come and grab my paints off you this weekend.
Yeah. I'll have to pop around at the weekend and have a nosy.
Start getting some paints back on on some models.
They're right at the back of a room somewhere.
Yeah, we'll find
those paints.
Yeah,
it was fun. We went around to pick all my board games up. That was a...
Not all board games were removed.
No, I can't. How many board games? I've got more board games than a board game shop.
Yeah.
Are you going to get some... board game storage furniture in the new house?
I'm thinking I don't need it. I could probably make furniture out of all the board games I've got.
Yeah.
Just like stack them up as a settee.
You could make
table.
A throne of board games.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's been my hobby update. As well as that, I've also been experimenting with army lists using the new chapter proof points for Warhammer World when we go in December. And I don't know if I get a chance to finish off the Eldar so I can take the Eldar. Do I take my Adeptus Custodians again? I like my Adeptus Custodians. I had a really good time using them at the tournament a few weeks back. Or I also have a really nicely painted Tau army that I didn't paint, but it's very nicely painted.
You painted some of it.
Painted a tiny little bit, but most of it was purchased like that. Do I take the Tau?
I reckon you bring the older. It depends. If the points have gone down, you might struggle to get your 2,000
well,
points, I suppose.
Yeah, from my first review of my Eldar list, I'm nearly 200 points in credit now. The Incarn is only 280 points or something. So if I wiggle some things around, I might be able to just slot the Incarn in.
Ooh, that'd be
and I've already started painting the Incarn, so...
I can't believe you've got two Wraith Knights at my house ready for painting. Well, actually, I think they're missing some weapons.
Yeah, they're in different states of repair, aren't they? Yeah.
But they'd have been cool to take.
Yeah, Wraith Knights. I don't know. I'll check. You carry on. I'll check how much Wraith Knights are with me.
Matt, what have you been doing in the hobby this last few days?
So last week, I think I'd transferred up the Iron Ravens. They're all based now.
They are done.
The Iron Ravens army is complete. And there's some pictures up on Twitter and Instagram, I think. I couldn't get all of the proper camera, so there'll be some proper glamour shots coming, but
there'll be some good shots from Warhammer World when they're on the nice boards.
There will be,
in
yeah.
a few weeks' time.
But yeah, so they're done. I'm really happy with them. Looking forward to painting some more Space Marines, which is by coincidence, you've brought a load of Warhammer Conquest sprues, haven't you?
Yeah, they're like 3 months worth of Conquest.
So yeah,
reinforcements.
Get those built and add to the Space Marines, which is cool. And I have built an entire Dark Uprisings worth of Zone Mortalis scenery, and it looks so good.
Impressive. Yeah, it does look really good. Really like this stuff. Can't wait to have some games on it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Fantastic.
I've started on the second box worth as well.
And so you've still got a sealed one there, I see.
Sealed one, yeah. So yeah, it should be good. I want to try and get a whole table's worth of stuff, because I think that'd be really fun.
Yeah,
cool. Really. Since the last podcast, I have painted 8 Savage Oryx.
8 Savage Oryx.
8 Savage Oryx. And an Endless Spell.
The Endless Spell looks really
Nashing
cool.
Jaws, yeah.
You're giving it really a nice cool. Orcish sort of twist.
Yeah, it looks really cool. I've never actually used it. I think it's only appeared in 2 of my lists so far, but I've never...
You always forget to cast it.
It's not that I forget to cast it, Matt. It's that I don't think I have the opportune moment to cast
okay.
it.
Okay.
I don't want it flying back in my face, or... I don't know. I've had other stuff that I've needed to cast. So, I'm sure he'll get used shortly. Now he's painted,
he's going to be used on the stream, hasn't he?
He's got to be used on the stream. So I've still got some Savage Oryx to finish this weekend, but they'll be done in time for Warhammer World on Wednesday.
Yes,
pretty exciting.
That's not long, is it? Less than
no.
a week.
No, and I have bought some Warhammer, but that's for Christmas presents.
Ooh, so. What Warhammer are you getting for Christmas?
Well, they're not for me. They're for a relative. But I can't say, just in case he's listening to the podcast,
yeah.
I'm not going to say what it is. I think that's everybody's hobby. I mean, it is a bit odd that we only recorded, 4 days ago?
You've got quite a lot in, though, since Sunday.
Yeah, eight orcs.
The concept of time's out the window, so... Yeah.
Especially Christmas. Thank goodness for advent calendars.
Yeah.
It's the only way I know what day it is.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I've stopped since Thursday last week.
Right, and on that note, we're going to take a pause and we're going to come back with the news. Right, we're used to this segment of the podcast being utterly insane with releases, but even Games Workshop has a heart and realises that the end of the year is coming, everybody's buying Christmas presents, so let's be a bit easier on the wallets.
A little bit easier, but still some temptations in there. So next week, we have got some old Blood Bowl Chaos Dwarfs from the 80s returning.
Do you know the most exciting thing for me about this?
Okay.
This made-to-order Chaos Dwarfs coming back. I think we'll see plastic Chaos Dwarfs next year.
I'm going to say that I don't think we are, because of the fact they've brought back these made to order for a second time.
No, I've got a feeling this is more testing the water.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mark my words. Remember this podcast, episode 65, Dave predicting plastic Chaos Dwarfs for Blood Bowl.
Okay, cool. Well, if you like the old models, you can order them for 1 week only, starting on Saturday. They're cool, they still stand up. Yeah, they might be a little bit dated compared to some of the newer kits, but they've got a bit of an 80s charm to them.
They've got
some
character.
And I think that's it for Games Workshop pre-orders next week. We have got some news, though, from Forge World. In the first instalment of their Road to Thramas series, which is chronicling the run-up to Book 9 Crusade of the Horus Heresy,
mm-hmm.
We saw some awesome Dark Angel stuff.
These look very nice.
So we had the... Intremptors, I think they're called. Interruptors? Something like that.
Interruptors.
The Interruptors. They are from the Dreadwing, which is a new wing of the Dark Angels that I don't think we've seen before.
I don't think I've heard. I mean, I'm not up to speed on Dark Angels lore, to be fair, but Deathwing, Ravenwing.
Apparently there's six different wings.
Right.
So yeah, these are the Dreadwing, and they deal in plasmary death.
Seems like a good wing to be part of.
It does. Yeah. They are armed with plasma burners.
That makes sense.
Which sound painful.
They do sound painful.
Plasma burners. They come up with some good names for plasma weapons nowadays, don't they?
They do.
Remember, it used to be plasma cannon, plasma gun, plasma pistol. Now it's like plasma annihilator.
Plasma burner.
Plasma destructor.
So whether these are kind of like souped devastators, I'm not sure. But they've got cool weapons, and you know, plasma's obviously a Dark Angels thing. And
Yeah, I think because they're the first founding legion, aren't they? And they just seem to have a lot more of the old technology. They were given more of the older technology because they were the first founding legion. So.
Well, talking of them being the first founding legion, the book Crusade will also have rules for Marduk Cedras, who is 250 years old at the time of the heresy and is one of the longest serving Marines.
Wow.
He's going to have a model and he leads the Dreadwing, so I imagine he's going to be armed with some kind of ridiculous plasma weapon.
He's done well, hasn't he, to survive 250 years in the plasma division. I was going to say. How reliable plasma technology is.
Never all the one.
He never overheats his weapon, does he?
He doesn't. Yeah, that's pretty good going, because the life expectancy of someone wielding plasma is not that long normally. And then we saw a new tank, the Legion Arquiter Bombard, armed with a Graviton Charge Cannon.
Yeah, this is cool. It's sort of a cross between a Thanatar Siege Engine from the Mechanicum and the Sabre tank we saw last week.
With a little bit of a
Plague crawler
vibe.
Plague burster, is it? Yeah.
Plague burst crawler. Yeah, there's definitely that kind of look to it. But yeah, this is a Space Marine artillery.
Looks nice.
I think it looks really nice.
I really like the Forge World Heresy tanks. I think when they first started, it was we had the old Mark Predators and things like that with the dome tops. They look smart enough. But if you look now, they're very, very cool, very, very sharp details on them and stuff now, so I do like them. Because, be interesting to find if they get 40k rules. I hope so.
And then the aforementioned Sabre is in the book as well, and this book is out in 2020.
Yeah.
Presumably with a line as well, so that's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
That is not much news, but some cool things for fans of Dark Angels and the Horus Heresy, and like we say, hopefully 40k rules as well. I imagine we'll probably see them closer to the time, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. Excellent. Well, unbelievably, that is the end of the news segment.
That's possibly the shortest news segment we've had.
Potentially the shortest news segment we've ever had. I don't know, the week you weren't on the podcast when you were on Warhammer TV, that was a pretty short news segment. typically. But that is it for now, so we're going to take another brief pause and get some new drinks, because we've got quite a big segment coming up next, as we've got our year in review. This week's episode seemed a fitting week to do our year in review, because we've got quite a lot to talk about next week, haven't we?
Yeah, busy one next week with Slaves to Darkness and Warhammer TV, of course.
Yeah. So, just decided to take a look back at 2019 through the different Warhammer realms and worlds, because quite a lot has happened, really.
Right in this section surprised me quite how much stuff has come out in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
It is craziness.
Yeah, yeah. And I think next year is going to be even busier. But anyway, we don't want to talk about next year right now. We're going to talk about this year. So do you want to start us off, Matt?
Yeah, so January kicked off with the Gloomspike Gits, a brand new army for Age of Sigmar. For fans of Squigs, Goblins, Trogoths and all that good stuff.
I remember seeing them in the cabinet at the New Year Open Day.
Yeah, which was first time. Also in January, and we saw quite a lot of the stuff here. Titan Death came out for Adeptus Titanicus, as did Gondor at War, so long ago now. Urban Conquest for close-knit city fights with a campaign system. Kill Team Arena and the Custodian Venatari all came out in January.
In January. Cool. Did we not see any Ultramarines characters in January? Or
we may have seen some at the Open Day. I think that was the 40k Open Day.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So January is pretty cool. Not as cool, for me, as February, where we saw the Gene Stealer Cults.
Yeah.
Now, I guess, I can't believe they've only been out a year, the latest book. But we had the new bike, the new vehicle, all sorts of awesome new kits, which really rounded them out from the few kits that they had in the previous edition, into a full-fledged force. And you're jumping on that bandwagon this year, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I liked your Gene Sealer army, but now I've really read into it and looked at all the different lists and stuff, and I couldn't tell you how many Gene Sealer Cult Battle reports I've watched. I feel like I'm a Gene Sealer Cult veteran. I've not even rolled a dice for one yet.
Was it the Dark Angels Terminator? They wear their armour bone, don't they? Wasn't that because they were all mutilated by Gene Stealers?
I don't know.
Some grudge matches. I'll find out.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Carrion Empire also came out. And alongside this battle box, a Skaven and Flesh Eater Court's battle tome.
At the same time.
Which was unexpected at the time. We'd seen it teased at the open day, mm-hmm. and it was pretty much like 2 weeks later, maybe 2 or 3 weeks later, maybe we sort of yeah. pre-order. And it was an ace battle box. I know you were a bit gutted.
I should have got it.
I think the characters you still can't get separately.
Nope.
Crazy.
So hopefully they're out soon. We also got a certain winged Primarch, Sanguinius.
Oh, gosh, that's amazing. What a time to be in the hobby. Still not painted him.
Still not painted him since February.
Yeah.
We got the Dreaded Amble for Blackstone Fortress, the first expansion for that. And Severina Rain, the commissar that we mentioned on our thinking of continuity here. But I think just the other day on our advent calendar on openings.
Yeah.
Yeah, this would be awkward if it's not been on yet. So, yeah, 2 months into the year, and we've had three battle tomes, a codex, multiple kits.
Yeah.
I think at that point we thought, oh, okay, it might be a busy year.
Yes.
And, March didn't disappoint with Shadow Spear, a new battle box for 40k, with a load of brand new kits.
Yeah.
It kind of came out of nowhere as well.
It was all the Vanguard Space Marines and the new Chaos Space Marines.
Yeah.
And Abaddon, did he come out?
Yeah, Abaddon came out alongside this Chaos Space Marine book. Loads of cool stuff.
Yeah.
Blades of Khorne for Sigmar came out at the same time as well.
Did it?
With some new kits, a scenery piece, and the spells. No, only in March. Malevolence for the Horus Heresy, pitting the Blood Angels against the demons. Sanguinius, who had an early release in February shows, finally got a proper pre-order on the
floor. Yeah, that's right, because they did a cool release with Sanguinius where you could purchase him with the base, the scenic base, and then later on, I think it was just on the normal...
Which is quite a good way of doing it. So yeah. The collectors get the cool base and then have a standard version of it later on in March. We got the Solar War, the first part of the Siege of Terror, which is a phenomenal book.
Yeah, good start to that story arc.
And then it was the Throne of Skulls, and a certain Khorne player came third with their Vorgrath the Scarred and Scarlock the Blood Host of Khorne.
That very quickly ticked off something off your bucket list.
It did, yeah, so I managed to get that done pretty quickly into the year, and that was a great event. I was really not expecting it, and I'm looking forward to the next event, which I think is going to be the GT. Oh no, we've got Unicorns in January, haven't we?
Yes.
So yeah, March was good. Going into April, we had Fire Slayers come out with another battle tome. Again, scenery pieces, endless spells, the normal stuff. A lot of these battle tomes this year didn't have much in the way of model support, but they did have endless spells and scenery pieces for most of them to kind of bring them up to date.
Yes, Matt, there was a couple that didn't.
We got another, it was Sonic's expansion, Doom of Moloch, which revolved around knights, which I am picking this up here, and I quite fancy doing some knights for Titanicus. For Underworlds, we had the Sylvaneth and the Caradhron warbands. The Head Knights of Slaanesh range came out with a load of kits, battle tome, all of the love. And it was a certain website's 2-year birthday.
Yay!
Screws and Brews turned 2 in April.
3 next year, wow.
I know.
That's maths.
The time flies when you're having fun. Into May, we had Warhammer Fest and a load of stuff revealed. There was a hole in this release, unfortunately, though, with the Sylvaneth, who were delayed. They were quarantined.
Stuck on a boat.
Monkeys.
On it. Monkeys.
Wasn't it? The boat had some animals and stuff on it.
It shouldn't have gone. It was quarantined.
I'm pretty sure monkeys were involved.
I don't know where the monkeys came from. We'll go with that. Sylvaneth delayed due to monkeys. But we did see a few cool things. We saw Forbidden Power, which was a kind of mini expansion with some new rules and some awesome Dominion of Sigmar scenery pieces.
And new endless spells.
New endless spells just for that book. And some alternate lists as well, with kind of some mixed armies and a new Nighthaunt Faction.
Yeah, Legion of Grief.
Legion of Grief, yeah.
So, yeah, and I thought we'd see more of these kind of things, and we haven't really.
Do we think it didn't do great?
I think it's probably got too much of a lead time to turn around that quickly. You
yeah,
know?
Maybe.
I guess you don't get bombarded with these things.
No.
And I think it's quite nice with a few new endless spells and a bit of new lore and bits. So, yeah, I'd be interested to see if we get something like that in 2020. We saw Halflings for Blood Bowl, which are ace. We saw Khal Jericho for Necromunda, who is ace. And the Book of Peril, allowing you to do your own bounty hunter gangs in Necromunda as well.
Which is your one of your projects for next year.
It is, yeah. And, yeah, looking forward to putting them together. And hopefully sell most of your gang to the various houses of Necromunda.
Yes.
Because that sounds like the kind of thing they'd do. Going into June, the big kind of headline item was Contrast.
I love Contrast.
Well, we saw this at Warhammer Fest, didn't we? The
Warhammer
Contrast.
Fest in May, they kind of showed it off. But yeah, June was the release for it. And it's a game changer, really, for painting armies.
Honestly, for me, as somebody who isn't a super confident painter, I love Contrast. I think it allows me to get... I wouldn't stand a chance of getting these artworks done by next week if it wasn't for Contrast.
Yeah, I mean, the concept of it's really good. That it's essentially your shade, your base, and your highlights in one because of the magical properties of it. Mm-hmm. It kind of has a gradient, doesn't it, going from the high points down to the low points. It's essentially an ink wash, really. But
it takes some practice to get used to how it runs.
And different colours have got different consistencies, and you've got to get a feel for them. Yeah. Some of them are better thinned with some contrast medium, some just go on fine, slapped on.
It's not a silver bullet. There's still some skill required to get your army looking
nice. And there are still some elements where you need to go back to the normal range. Yeah, I mean, it's great to combine the two.
I've tried Eidneth just contrast, with the exception of metallics I did.
Yes.
As I usually would. But since then, I think I've used a bit of contrast in normal projects, and it's a case of it adds to your toolbox, doesn't it? Yeah. Flesh, hair, that kind of stuff's really, really easy with contrast. Leather.
Mm-hmm. Was it June now when we did our contrast challenge?
It must have been June when we did the contrast challenge. Maybe it was July, because I think it was towards the end of June.
Was
maybe.
It 1,000 points in a...
1,000 points in a week.
In a week.
Yeah, and I think we all managed
it. We all managed it.
In fact, you're still using your army.
I love my army, yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah, so that was really good. But that wasn't the only paints we got. We got a brand new airbrush paint range as well, which hasn't had as much love as the contrast. And I'm going to be getting some of these over Christmas, and I think I might do some videos to show it off because I've got high hopes for them.
Yeah.
I know there's been some grumblings about the fact they're not dropper bottles, but really, at the end of the day, paint's paint, isn't it?
Well, you can move them
into
dropper.
You can put them into other dropper bottles or just put it in with a paintbrush.
Yeah.
What I like about using these rather than, say, Vallejo or something, you've got the match with the other Citadel range.
Yeah.
And the advantage that I can just wander down to Games Workshop and get a bottle of paints.
Yes, you can.
Rather than having to order it in now. Obviously, your mileage may vary. Obviously, UK is very kind of Games Workshop heavy. If you're in America... Maybe, you know, Vallejo and stuff's easier to get hold of, I don't know. But, looking forward to having a good play with that. And then the main paint line got some new paints as well. Quite a few new paints. Some, like, new burgundies, Grey Knight Steel's an awesome colour. There's a new black, which is got better coverage than a Baden Black. Or Abaddon Black, according to Phil Kelly in the latest Dale White Dwarf. Redemption there. So loads of new paints. We had the General's Handbook, which is always a highlight of the year for new battle plans and... awesome stuff. This time they had a separate volume with all the points in, something that's been replicated with 40k.
Yeah,
and I really like the General's Handbook this time around because I thought it fleshed out some of the like the older factions. Wood Elves got some good rules in there.
Yeah,
Duarden got some good rules in there. Lizardmen got some good rules, and the Seraphon got some good rules there. Okay, some of that's been undone a little bit subsequently, but at the time,
it was really good.
Good book.
I think it's a good thing. And Apocalypse came out, which we haven't had a game of yet, but it looks like it has a lot of epic 40k DNA in there, which is definitely a good thing.
Definitely. I think we'll definitely be building up to Apocalypse next year.
I think the only reason we haven't really done it is because we were very Sigmar focused this year.
It has been a very Sigmar year.
Yeah.
I think there'll be a bit more 40k love going into next year from us. So, yeah, going into July, we had The Lost and the Damned, the second Siege of Terror book. Considering this is an 8-book series, we're rattling through them.
Mm-hmm.
We had Chaos Knights. We'd seen them teased at Warhammer Fest.
Yeah.
They got a brand new book and a couple of kits.
These knights are better than Imperial Knights, I think.
I think so as well.
Really good.
Traitor Command came out for Blackstone Fortress, the second expansion for that, along with Warcry, the game of tactical skirmish battles.
You've still not had a game of this, have you?
I haven't, no.
We really enjoyed it. I'm surprised we've not played it since.
Yeah, it's good.
It was really good.
I think now everyone's settled with moves and stuff, we can get some...
Some more games.
As a aside, in the latest White Dwarf, there's rules for using Gotrek, and it comes with his data card as well in the magazine.
That's really cool.
And then we had the AOS Open Day, where we saw lots of awesome stuff revealed. I say we, you guys couldn't make it, but I saw some awesome stuff revealed. That we'll see in a couple of months' time. August, we had more Warcry. The rest of the warbands came out. This was something that had concerned me originally, because for some of the other skirmish style games, they took a while releasing all drip the factions. Fed. Where this one is like, nope, half out week one, the rest of it's out week two, and then there's a few more factions down the line that we haven't seen yet, like the Spire Tyrants.
We haven't seen them yet, have we?
I think they're out early January. Mm. We had the Necromunda Enforcers, which Jay's got a few sprues of here.
Yep.
These are the cops in Necromunda, and they look ace. Alongside that, we got the Book of Judgments, which had a whole new campaign system in there, which is really, really cool.
This was all at the UK Games Expo, wasn't it?
It was all shown at the UK Games Expo, yeah. And, Necromunda has had a load of love this year, and I think we're starting a bit of a campaign in January and looking forward to putting all this together. It's a lot of the 40k related stuff has kind of been passed us by, hasn't it, really?
Yeah,
it has this year.
Speaking of 40k, though, there was a big release in August, and that was the new Space Marines Codex and a raft of new kits, all the new Vanguard stuff. We had expansion books for the Ultramarines and White Scars the same month.
Yep.
And we had Blackstone Fortress Escalation, another expansion to Blackstone, which has had some serious love this year.
Yeah, and Space Marines, I mean, this was a game changer for Space Marines.
Oh, it was.
People were complaining they weren't competitive enough. Well, they are now.
Just a bit, yeah.
Yeah, especially the Vanguard stuff.
And, you know, I've never done Space Marines Force. This book changed my mind. At the time, my only criticism was it's not the best laid out book they've done.
No.
There's a lot of flipping back and forth to find your data slates that you want. But it's an awesome book with rules for... people were worried that a lot of the old kits would get phased out. Yes, some have been and have become legends now. But I'd say pretty much every plastic kit's still in there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's the biggest codex you can buy.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. Going into September, we got a brand new game that came out of nowhere as well, Aeronautica Imperialis. Now, we haven't played this, but it looks really cool.
I'm just waiting for the Eldar to get released, and then I'll be jumping on that.
I really want to collect some Imperial fighters.
Yeah.
I was nearly swayed by this Grot Bomber in Grot Goodness. But
I'd happily do an Orc Air War if you want to wear
it. It's the Imperials I'm after. Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I think we wait until there's a third faction out, and then because I think Eldar will be next, won't they?
Well, yeah. At the time, I remember they teased some stories, didn't they, on the community of Eldar versus.
Eldar have got some of the nicest ships as well for a game like this.
Yeah, it's not ships don't fly though, do they? You mean planes?
Yeah, maybe I was thinking spaceships.
You're thinking of Warhammer Subnautica.
Hey, I'd play that as well.
Man of War.
Yeah. We also had the Iron Hands of Ravengard expansions come out rapid off the heels of the Space Marine book.
And with two plastic kits.
This is something I've liked, the kind of supplement codexes. I do wonder if we'll see this for future books.
Well, I think we will. Most books have multiple. I mean, you've got the Tau with all the different sets. You've got the Sisters of Battle recently with all their different orders. Eldar with different craft worlds. They could apply this to multiple army books
and throw out a new, because that's one of the things that we mentioned in our Sisters of Battle review last week, that really only the Order of the Martyred Lady have a named character.
Yeah.
Well, you could put out order books and have a named character for each of them in there.
But some people have criticised the fact that it's another book you've got to buy to get all the rules that you'll need for your army. But personally, I love a good book first and foremost. Secondly, it fleshes out your particular army. If you pick up, I've not read through the new Space Marine book, and I'm sure all the other chapters are in there, but there's probably a lot of Ultramarines talking there. To get a supplement that is just purely on your particular part of that faction, that I think that'd be really good.
I'd say the rule's the smallest part of these supplements. Most of it's the lore and background.
Yeah.
The alternative, though, is that you have to wait 3 or 4 years for another book.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
new stuff. Yeah. So surely you'd much rather prefer to supplement. Get a supplement with some new model mm-hmm. than a...
Yeah.
I would, anyway.
Yeah. We also saw Warhammer Underworld's Beastgrave come out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're big fans of Wonderworld, aren't we?
Wonderworld, yeah.
Wonderworld. I kind of burped as I was saying it. Underworld, Warhammer Underworld. It's a great game. If you've not played it, it's super easy to pick up. Well, I say it's super. It's easy to play, but it's hard to master.
Yeah.
Because of all your deck building
it's
elements.
A neat system, yeah.
There's a lot of tic-tacs in there. It's a really quick game. We rattled through a load of games of,
and
you know, Underworld.
Can play it multiple players, like 3-player, 4-player.
And it works really well.
Yeah. Like sometimes it can bog down the game where you've got multiple players in. It works just as well with 3 as it does with 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like the aesthetic of Beastgrave. It's a nice
more
breath
warmer.
Of fresh air, isn't it, from the Shaiish stuff previously.
Yeah. Yes.
I can't wait to explore this realm next year.
Yeah. I think this is teeing up that. Grr. We also saw another 2 battle tomes, Cities of Sigma and Uruk Warclans.
Yeah.
We had no scenery, and we had no endless spells, but both of these books I think are excellent.
They're fantastic. But both of them were really good. Like Matt said, only criticism is the fact that we didn't get anything else, but we did get two strong books.
Very good books. And I think both of them have done very well on the tournament scene as well. Yeah. Cities of Sigmar, arguably there's some like standout builds, your magic heavy forces, your Tempest's Keep, but your Uruk War Clans, the big wars, smashing face, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Awesome. Going into October, we had Blood Bowl Lizardmen came out, the Guacamole
Creator Greatest. We're getting our words wrong on this podcast this week.
Have you picked them up yet, Dave?
No, not yet. No. There's too much stuff, Jake.
Yeah, there is.
Too much stuff, but I do want to get these guys. These are my Blood Bowl team.
Maybe Warhammer World.
I'm going to buy some ogres at Warhammer World, I think.
Ogres.
I painted up the halflings, but the ogres might be able to survive longer than one turn without getting battered.
Yeah.
Halflings are fun to paint. Speaking of halflings, the Scouring of the Shire also came out. That was a good segue, wasn't it?
It was. Very good.
This was this kind of Jay Clare surprise expansion that he crammed in a night, according to Warhammer Fest.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a really cool book. I think we did a review on the podcast a few months ago, didn't we?
We did.
And for all lovers of hobbits, you have to go pick up this book because it's cool. We got the first Psychic Awakening wave. With Phoenix Rising and Blood of the Phoenix. Big old box full of all of the Eldar and a couple of new characters and a couple of new kits.
This was unexpected for me. I was not expecting a new Eldar Phoenix Lord. I mean, how old are the Phoenix Lords?
They're
20, 30-year-old models. I was not expecting this.
Your first... No, they're not. They're not the first Plastic Aspect Warriors, because Dire Avengers came for... The first new Plastic Aspect Warriors for a while.
Yeah. And it's something the community's been crying out for. And I think it was a really good box. There was a lot of grumbling again about the price of this. I think, bearing in mind it has so many new kits in it, I think it was pretty good.
Two new special characters and 2 new units, the Incubi and the Howling Banshees.
Yeah.
And we're not just talking boring kits, these are amazing.
Yeah, they are.
They look superb. Those Incubi, I was like, I suddenly want to collect a Drakari army. They look brilliant.
I've been tempted by Drakari armies. It was very cheap, I think, hovering around the £100 price point on Black Friday. And I was like, I really might want to buy this box, but managed to resist.
Trezor with Incubi and some Raiders.
It'd be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
We saw the Imperial Fists and Salamanders come out, again with their respective characters.
Yeah.
We took Ace. And the Feast of Bones dropped. This was a big old battle box pitting the ogres against the new boys on town, the Ossiarch Bone Reapers. In an unusual move... Having new kits out before the main wave of an army.
Yeah, the only thing out that week was the Battle Tome in the box.
But we didn't have long to wait, because going into the first week of November, we had the entire Ossiarch Bone Reaper range drop in a week.
Yeah.
Which has got to be the biggest one-week release Games Workshop have ever done.
How many kits was it in a week?
Lots. If you look over on YouTube/SpruceBrews, we have got a video where we open every single one of those boxes and have a look at all the sprues.
Yeah,
cool.
There's a lot of stuff. And I've not built these because they're going to be my project for next year. I don't know how I've managed to resist, but Yeah, looking forward to painting these guys up.
I've built some ogres ready for next year. Not quite finished, but...
What are you guys doing?
I know. But that's not all. We also had Necromunda Dark Uprising, which is an even bigger box full of essentially enough of Zone Mortalis scenery to do a 2-foot by 2-foot board.
Yeah.
You get the entire rule book. You get a campaign system in that rule book. You get the rules for two warbands, the Enforcers and the Corpse Grinders. Not only that, you get those gangs in the box as well. You get three sprues of variously armed Enforcers and a big old pile of Corpse Grinders. You probably get enough bits to make about 15 guys.
Ace.
Which, for your cheap cannon fodder, angry men with axes, that's enough to get your warband going. Mm. Really, really good box. Again, not a cheap box, but for the price point, so much stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good. And I can see a lot of people getting into Necromunda with this box, because I think a lot of people were disappointed that the previous boxed game didn't have scenery. It was just flat cardboard tiles.
I think we've been tempted by Necromunda for quite a while, but I think this was the tipping point.
Yeah.
Especially with that scenery.
I think Necromunda, because it is close confines... Even though there are rules to play with, like, the Sector Mechanica stuff, I think it just suits corridor kind of combat better.
Yeah.
Right. And the new scenery can build with multiple levels and stuff, which is quite cool. And I probably will have a bit of that. But I think at its purest, it is tight corridors, dipping behind cover, flushing people out with flamers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, brutal combat in the Undercity. Which is cool. But that's not the only box that we got in November. The Emperor blessed us with a gift from Terror itself in the form of the Sisters of Battle army set.
Finally out. Plastic Adeptus Sororitas.
Sisters of Battle.
Sisters of Battle.
Them ladies.
Yes, so, and this had the brand new codex, which isn't out till January in it, which is really cool. Coincidentally, if you'd like to win said codex, head over to our Twitter page, like and follow us, and retweet the post that's floating around, and you could win one. You've got until Saturday, so
get in there very, very quick then by the time this podcast is out.
We had Faith and Fury, another Psychic Awakening book with a brand new Chaos Sorcerer who looks ace.
He looks brilliant.
We've been waiting for that Chaos Sorcerer since the beginning of the year.
I think we saw him in a rumour engine around about the time of... Shadow Spear, I want to say.
Yeah, I think it was, because everybody expected he was coming out with that range of chaos stuff.
And then we had the 40k open day at the end of November, where we saw, again, some awesome stuff. I say we saw, Dave didn't make this one either.
No, I didn't make
it. But me and Jay went down and saw all of the cool of the open day. And that brings us crashing into December. And already we've had the Blood of Baal, we've got Mephiston, chapter approved, various annuals for most of the specialist game systems, and a raft of awesome battle forces. And the month's not out. We've got Slaves to Darkness dropping at the weekend. We've got the Rohan stuff for Lord of the Rings. I think it's safe to say it's been a good year for the hobby.
Ogres for Blood Bowl. Excellent.
So, yeah, any standout releases or months for you guys?
I think the new Space Marine book has really changed the 40k scene a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially with Space Marines. I think it's been a fantastic year. Aeronautica, I think, was the biggest surprise. Wasn't expecting that this year. What about you, Jay?
The Gloomflight Gits release. I really love that release. I thought that was really cool. All the model kits that came out with that, the scenery piece, and the Mangler Squig, the Squig Boing Grot Bounders.
Boing Grot Bounders? Yeah.
The Gobberpalooza. Yeah. That was a mental release, Gloomflight Gits.
The Ossiok Bone Reapers, a whole new army and a load of new kits. Yeah, we've been spoiled this year. I've got a feeling next year's going to be even better.
We won't do any predictions right now, but I'm sure we've got some predictions coming up in a podcast very soon.
Yeah, I think traditionally our first January episode, we might start looking into what's coming.
Predictions.
Yeah.
As we start our new projects. Excellent. If you had any standout moments of 2019, perhaps you
you know, met an achievement this year in the hobby. Let us know at Sprues and Brews on Twitter or facebook.com/Sprues and Brews or comment on the website spruesandbrews.com. We're going to take another pause and we have got our second feature, two features on this week's podcast. Our second feature is going to be looking at the latest chapter approved, so keep listening. It's been a while since we've had a second feature on the podcast, but we have one on this week's. And that is because it's been out a week now, hasn't it? Just over a week. But we've got the latest chapter approved, which, for those who don't play 40K, is the General's Handbook of Age of Sigmar, really. It's got revised battle plans in there. It's got new battle plans. It's got new lore. Well, not really lore, but...
new kind of ways to play.
New ways to play.
And like we mentioned earlier, this year... the points changes have been split out into a book containing the points values of every single thing in the game, which is really good.
Yeah.
I prefer that than just the amendments.
Yeah. Do you know what one of my favourite things is, just before we make a start, is the formatting?
Well, you see, I do wonder, is this the aesthetic of the next edition?
I hope so. I love the formatting of it. I love the fonts. The first thing I noticed was when you go onto the mission pages...
Yes.
I really like the contrast in like the mission types and stuff, the colours.
What I really like as well, each mission's got a sidebar with the kind of thinking behind where the mission's come from, what changes they've made, whether it's new, if it's an old one reinvented.
Yeah. So it gives you a sort of indication of how to approach the mission when you're playing it for the first time.
Not so much that. It kind of gives you an idea of how this mission plays.
Yeah.
But it's more so, for example, I've got one here. This is the Four Pillars, which is one of the battle plans from last year's Chapter Approved. So it says, Four Pillars is taken from Chapter Approved 2018 edition. This mission encourages players to ensure they hold more of the four equally spread objectives than their opponent at the end of each battle round. This is made easier if a player is also trying to destroy more units than their opponent each round, meaning the players can take a variety of approaches to how they score victory points. A key part of this mission is that only troops can control objectives. Players must make critical decisions when building their army and prioritising targets on the battlefield. That was a poor example, because in other ones, they so mentioned
that gives
how
you a good
it differs.
Idea of how to approach the mission.
On some of the other ones, it sort of tells you what's kind of different between this one and last year's.
Well, I like that some of these read out is in a nutshell what the mission is, which is good when you're flicking through to
wasn't
mission.
What I was trying to point out, but never mind. Never mind.
So I think we're jumping ahead here, Dave.
Yeah, we are a little bit. It's because we're talking about the formatting.
So yeah, so it's a really cool book. It's very much about the three ways to play. Split into open play, narrative play, and match play.
The artwork looks nice when you're just looking through there.
Yeah, it is really nice. Should we start on open war?
Open war, yeah. So the open war cards is something that's been in the game for a while now. I think since the game came out, they've released these. This gives you new ways of generating missions. So as well as your traditional drafty cards, that's what you're doing, there's now things like secret agendas. So you'll draft your battle plan, then you'll each draft a mission card to see what you're trying to do in the mission, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Is it in this part where... because I know they've recently changed it. No, I think I'm getting ahead of myself now. No, ignore me. We'll come back to that.
There's also a way of randomly generating an army. So you pick a size of battle, that'll give you a power level limit, and then you roll on a D66 table, which will tell you, you get a fast attack unit, you get a troops unit. You've got that total power level to play with, but you can only pick units as you roll them up on this chart.
Do we think this only really works if you've got quite a big army to delve
a big
into?
Selection of units to choose from, perhaps.
Yeah, I think if you've got a big collection, you want to play a quick game where... you know, it's not going to be the most tuned army list because essentially it's all random.
Yeah.
I think it'd be fun for a little game, though.
Yeah, it would.
And this is what the open play is. It's kind of like, you bring your collection, don't worry about finely crafted army lists and stuff, just roll some dice and play some games.
Yeah.
Similar, I suppose, to the way that you now generate terrain in Sigmar, so much easier with just randomly drawing it.
Yeah.
This is a way to do a quick game by just generating your army really quickly. Is it for everyone? No, but I'd give it a go.
If you've got a lot of stuff and you can't decide what to take in your army, just do it randomly.
Yeah. So into narrative play, we get a new kind of game system, I suppose, in Spearhead. So this is about tank armies and
stuff.
So there's some new rules, like there's roads now, and if you're on a road, you get an extra 3-inch movement, unless you're a flyer.
Cool.
So you're going to be fighting over those vital roads, and you know, you could take more damage through dangerous terrain than you would normally. There's brand new missions that are kind of bespoke and set around those kind of games, which is cool because your normal missions wouldn't necessarily work if you'd gone tank heavy.
No, I don't think so.
Which is really cool. So there's one where you've got to kind of attack on a defender and you've got to kind of break through the enemy lines.
Yeah, there's some cool deployment maps in those missions.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very cool. Very different.
And what's really cool, you get a bespoke suite of stratagems that are just for these missions as well. Which is really cool.
A bit like the Planet Strike ones and those ones.
Yeah, but they're army specific as well. So you've got like a Necron one, reactive shielding, where you can roll an additional D6 and select which one you use for your quantum shields.
I'm just looking at this Godhammer las cannons. Use this stratagem when you select an Adeptus Astartes Land Raider unit from your army. You can re-roll wound rolls for attacks made using this unit's twin las cannons at target enemy vehicles. 2 command points.
So I think that's cool that they've given some love to these different games.
And like the artwork as well with the Stomper and the Baneblade.
Is that the Voistrian Firstborn on there, is it?
Yes, it is. Good spot.
So then we get some rules for linked games. So this is mixing games of Kill Team, 40k and Apocalypse in a narrative structure where effects in one game will impact the other.
This, I think, is one of my favourite parts of this book. Because I think we need to do more of this sort of campaign system.
Yeah, and it gives you a really, rather than just saying, here's some missions, it gives you a framework on how to create them yourself as well, with ideas like, if you win the game, you get the choice of mission in the next one, or extra command points, or extra units, or... I like that it gives you that freedom to kind of create your own system. But that's not to say it doesn't give you some pre-build ones. So there's an example here, War of Nightmares, where you start with a kill team battle. Whoever wins gets 2 additional command assets in the second game, which is Apocalypse. And then the winner of that gets additional command points in the final game, which is 40k. So jumping between different systems, which is really cool. And there's a load of different ones. What's even more interesting is what they call parallel battles. Now, you're going to need some room space for this one.
Yeah.
But you set up simultaneously a game of 40k and a game of Kill Team. The example they've given is that there's a battle going on a planet, there's a space station in orbit with some kind of like orbital laser or something. So you play a battle round of the game, awesome. You then play a game of Kill Team, and depending on who wins that Kill Team mission, they get control of the big death laser that shoots down a unit in the 40k game.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And again, it's more of a framework, but gives you some ideas where you could have, I don't know, Apocalypse, 40k and Kill Team, all with different people playing, but being able to help each other in the different games depending on what's happening.
That's really cool.
A lot of these are going to need set up, and you're probably going to want a Games Master or someone to run the event, but I think it's really fun stuff that we certainly haven't played any games like that at 40k recently.
No, we haven't.
And I think that sounds really, really cool.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some of these other variants on that. Secure the Artifact, for example. Saboteurs. Yeah, some really good ideas.
So the next bit is, you know what's really cool? The film 300. Where you've got an elite force fighting off against all odds. They're all going to die. But the question is, how long do they last? Well, this is a rule set to create those kind of challenge battles where you have an underdog fighting against the odds, and it gives you a whole load of kind of narrative ideas.
That's brilliant.
What's really, really cool, there's a scoring system based on how long you last, so you can then swap sides and see if you last longer. Table.
That's brilliant. Custodians against hordes.
So the first one here, last stand, so the attacker deploys 12 inches in, then there's a gap of 12 inches, then the defender's got pretty much the rest of the board. They can set up the scenery as their defence lines and get their people proper dug in. And if they last 1 to 3 battle rounds, they get 1 star, and then each additional battle round they last, they get an extra star.
Cool.
The bad guys get to keep bringing dead units on.
Yep.
So you could do your elite squad of custodians fighting against waves and waves of demons and stuff.
Holding the tunnels of the Imperial dungeon against hordes of demons.
And this kind of stuff's really cool, and I really want to play some of these.
Look at that. There's some really cool stratagems for this as well, which work really well with the narrative. For example, for free command points, the defender can use a stratagem where they basically don't take any morale tests.
Oh, right, yeah.
So that's really cool. Say, for example, you've got Imperial Guarders defending, you just flat free some command points, you're not taking any morale tests for that turn. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really, really cool. I want to play some of these, and there's a few different, again, examples they've made, but they do give you that rule set at the start to create your own objectives as well, which again is something we haven't really seen before. It's making it a bit more, I guess, like, you know, role playing game source book, where it's here's some ideas to make some cool games.
Yeah.
Because I think both systems, really, Sigmar and 40k, have been weighted towards the match play. I think this is the first book where they're trying to encourage you to play some other systems.
I think this is... I'm just looking at the Domination Challenge mission. I think that's the only battle plan where your setup is just the defender gets the whole board and the attacker doesn't start anywhere. And they just come in. Very cool.
And then we get to the match play. Yes, lots of people exclusively play match play, or your tournaments are going to be match play, really. And this, as we said a little bit earlier, kind of brings in all your new missions. It tightens up some of the rules that have come from beta into the main rules, such as prepared positions are now in the book.
Yep.
So for 2 command points, your entire army, apart from Titans and aircraft, count as being in cover.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
I don't think there's many other changes from the last
lot. I just had a quick look. I don't think there's anything.
So obviously you can only refund 1 command point per battle round. I think that was in the previous one.
Each time you cast Smite, you must reduce it by 1. That was in the last chapter approved, I think. Unless you're Thousand Suns or Grey Knight.
So and then basically the main bulk of this is the new missions, which there's 2 brand new ones and then 4 reworked ones.
So the first one is Crusade. Crusade is a brand new mission incorporating elements of several that have come before it. It's quite a straightforward one, this one.
Yeah, essentially, you have 2 armies, you are fighting over objectives, but you only score objectives at the start of your turn. So you can quite easily force somebody off. You can't take an objective off somebody. Well, you can try, but you can deny somebody getting it in their turn.
Yeah.
So you've got to kind of think a turn ahead, I suppose, where you guys are going to be after an enemy turn of shooting.
Yeah.
Which is cool. One thing that is changing all of these missions is just some wording to make it clear who goes first. Where before, you'd roll off, see who gets the map, roll off on some of them, and then work out who's first and second. Now you roll off, the winner decides who's the attacker and who's the defender.
Right.
And then the defender generates the map and selects their deployment zone, and the attacker deploys their army first.
Right.
So from that initial roll off, you essentially get to decide, do I want the first turn, or do I want to pick my deployment zone?
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's a much cleaner, easier way about it.
Yeah.
Rather than constantly rolling for different things. Your second new mission is Lockdown. This one's interesting because you have
really cool
6 objectives, but each turn you lose an objective.
From the second battle round.
Essentially,
you set everything up, you take turns putting down 6 numbered objectives.
Yeah.
So at the start, at the end of the second, at the start of the second battle round, is it? You remove objective marker 2.
Right.
Third battle round, 3 goes, then 4, then 5. So only number 1 and number 6 stay for the entire game.
Right.
Yeah.
So in your alternating deploying, you've got to think about, okay, well, that's objective 2, but I mean, you have that a turn, so
yeah.
Is that an important one to put near me? Or do you just put it in the enemy deployment zone because I don't care about that?
Yeah.
And then that has a bubble of where you can't put more objectives. It's quite a clever one where you're thinking even in the putting down the D tokens on the battlefield section.
I don't think you know what number they are until you've placed them. At the start of the first battle round, but before the first turn begins, the player taking the first turn selects 1 objective marker to be objective marker 1. The player taking the second turn selects another objective marker to be number 6, and then you roll to find out which
one is that. So you pick the 2 that are going to be there for the whole game.
For 1 and 6, and then the other ones are random.
Yeah. But yeah, it seems really, really fun. We've not seen anything like that before.
I think the idea behind this is to get you moving around the battlefield.
Yeah.
It's not very good for a castle army, I don't think.
Unless you've got 1 and 6 in your opponent's zone.
Yeah, well, that would be helpful. But your opponent gets to pick the 6. So if they do that, why?
Oh, yeah. But I quite like
they like the, a challenge.
Yeah.
I quite like the objective to grade over the game. That's a cool thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's fun.
It frees up units to move them around, yeah. You know, rather than being stuck camping on objectives.
Which has been one of the problems. I'm surprised they haven't done some of the Sigmar stuff where you can tag it.
Yeah.
But that's probably more of a next edition change rather than retweaking the missions. And yeah, there's not massive changes for the other four, but enough to keep things interesting.
So we've got Scorched Earth Returns, Ascension, Frontline Warfare, and the Four Pillars.
So it's a kind of a best of 40k missions, which is not a bad thing.
Yeah. Next, you're going on to Maelstrom of War with the objective cards. Now, actually, I've been watching quite a few battle reports with Maelstrom cards, and I quite like it if we maybe mixed up, because we don't really play with the objective cards much.
No, well, it suggests in the start of the section that you can roll a d6, then pick from either table.
I think one thing that you guys really didn't like is that some cards were utterly useless to your army.
Yeah, like cast a psychic power or something.
Yeah, or if, you know, kill a witch, kill a psyker, and you're playing against Tau. But they've changed the rules slightly now. I'm pretty sure this is the part where it has it, where you can actually discard cards from your... is it in here? Or was this
something
else? Yeah,
you've always been able to discard them, but... you know, there's a stratagem where you can get rid of two and draw two new ones. I think
it's before you even draw any cards. You can take out cards that you can't achieve.
You can basically do a mulligan. So you get five, you can look at them. If you don't like them, you can discard them and draw four new ones, which just gives you that first cycle of if you get five duff ones, you can get rid of it.
It means you're not getting off to such a bad start.
Yeah. But yeah, and then there's six missions going through again. Pretty good. We haven't played it much in the... I think when the game first came out, this edition, we played a lot of Maelstrom of War games. I'd be up for revisiting these.
Yeah, I think they can be quite fun. I can see why we haven't played them, because they can be very swingy.
Yeah.
But I think they're different, aren't they? And
yeah.
They give you a lot more different goals rather than just capturing objectives.
That is true.
It makes you play the game differently.
I do think the other set of scenarios is more tactical. It's more in your control, where there's the random element with the cards in these ones.
Where suddenly you might have a card for... you have to kill a flyer. Necessarily, you might not... You might have more important things to do rather than shoot down somebody's flyer.
But arguably, if you want a victory that is point, an important then... thing if you need the... Yeah, they need a... Mm. So it depends. Yeah. It depends. But yeah, I think that'd be cool. So then, going on to the rest of the book, we get, finally, the new demon rules. I was kind of expecting these to be in an Emperor's Children codex, but...
There is time next year.
There is time next year. So this collects together all those new Slaaneshi...
the special characters.
War Scrolls.
Epitome.
We also get some of the ones that were slightly updated from... what's it called? Wrath and Rapture. Yeah. So your Blood Crushers and Flesh Hands and stuff.
Horrors and some things. Takes.
So yeah, at least there's now an official place where all these War Scrolls on. Some of the Seeker Chariots have had their rules changed as well, because a lot of them were in the indexes rather than the codex. So it's good to see these back in a proper book.
The indexes can just be parked now.
I think essentially,
much.
Yeah, the indexes have
I don't think there's anything that's not...
Apart from maybe the Forge World books.
Yeah.
Everything else is either in a White Dwarf or in a book.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe just in time for a new set of indexes, I don't know, for the next edition of the game. I don't think they'd do that, though. I think they're at the point now where new stuff's going to be added through supplements like Psychic Awakening.
I don't think they'll do another index now.
And then the last part of the book, we get rules for pretty much every scenery piece in the game, which is good. So those are the fortifications that you can buy as part of your army, but then also rules for stuff like forests and barricades and containers, clarifying some of the stuff that seemed a bit funny, like rules as written in the main rule book, if you're standing on top of a container, you get +1 armour.
Yeah.
This says you're not in a defensible position, so you don't get that.
Yeah.
No.
So I think we'll probably use these, because they're just clear... I think they tried to have some generic rules to make the game flow quicker, but in some situations...
It didn't work.
It didn't quite work, so this just clarifies that. So, ruins, only infantry, beasts and swarms, and units that can fly, can go on the upper levels. Infantry only get cover work when they're in it. Anything else, has to be 50% covered. Just kind of fine-tuned it a little bit, which is not a bad thing. And similar to what we've seen in Sigmar as well, I think the General's Handbook did a similar thing, just going through pretty much all of the GW scenery pieces and saying, this is the rules that they have.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Like the Sector Mechanicus stuff. Ruins, infantry imagined to be able to just climb up the walls and stuff, where with the Sector Mechanicus you have to go up ladders.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like stuff like that. It just tidies up the game. Then the second half of it is the points. These are all over the internet, if I'm honest, so I'm sure...
Important, though, every points value is in this book.
Almost every points value.
Almost every
so
points value.
So the Sisters of Battle are in here with their points from the new codex. However, their war gear is missing. Yeah. I don't know if that's just an oversight and it's been missed out, but your stuff like your banners and your rods that your canonesses have, the points for them are actually missing from the book.
Maybe they just hadn't finalised them before it went to print.
Potentially. Or it's just a formatting issue, maybe. And there's a few typos. your cultists are expensive now.
Neophyte hybrid. A neophyte hybrid of his 4 plus ballistic skill, is 5 plus save, is 55 points a model. Apparently, I think they got an extra 5 in there. It was funny because when I picked my copy up from Games Workshop in Chester, or Warhammer in Chester as they're now called, I mentioned to him that I was starting Gene Steel Cult Army in the new year, and he very quickly mentioned this typo to me and said, obviously, they're not custodians, and they're not 55 points per model. Otherwise, my army really got elite very quickly.
That's the only exception that I've seen, those Missing Sisters points. I think everything else is in there, including Forge World, or your Deathcore Krieg, or your funky Forge World Demons, or your Forge World Custody stuff.
Yeah,
it's all in there, which is good.
Excellent. So what do you think of the book, Matt?
I think it's, what, £20?
Yeah.
I think both this and General's Handbook are worth buying every year.
Yeah.
For the updated rules. I love all the new narrative stuff in this. I think we really need to play some.
Yeah.
Even just for the new missions, though, I think it's always worth it. It refreshes the game every year, doesn't it?
It does.
Some challenge missions. I'd love to try them.
Yeah, we need to do that. It sounds really good.
Custodies are made for that.
Yeah.
Now, traditionally, we tend to go to Warhammer World in December for a couple of days for a mini tournament between us all. That's normally where we try out chapter approved the first time.
Yeah.
But we might sneak in a game before that, you know?
Yeah, I think so. Brilliant. So that is chapter approved 2019. Can't wait for 2020 edition.
Yeah.
Probably same time next year. We're going to take a slight pause here. We're not quite finished. We've got the community top three picks and we've got our top three picks, which is coming up next. We love a top three here at Sprues and Brews HQ, and that is what we've got for you now. Our top three books from 2019. These are not Black Library books. These are gaming books.
Yeah.
So codexes, battle tomes, supplements, expansions. I'm going to start us off this week for a little bit of a change.
Okay.
My third choice is actually a book that came out at the beginning of the year, but it's only just in the last couple of weeks I've delved so deeply into it.
An oldie but a goodie.
February even, going by your year in a review. And that's the Gene Steel Cults. I know I've spoken a lot about them the past couple of weeks, but I think it's the army that I've been sort of... We've played so much Sigmar this year. There wasn't a 40k army that was standing out for me that I thought I'd enjoy using that was quirky and from what I've read and from what I've seen of the cults, I think that it's really good. My favourite thing about the book is how much the gameplay reflects what the army is like with your blip deployment or your ambush rules. All the clever stratagems, the fact that you can just get all of the stratagems, like that you can build an army and just have like hundreds of command points.
It's essentially a guard army but stealthy with aliens.
Yeah, I think it's such a quirky book and a quirky army, and I think the rules really reflect even down to the stratagems. For example, we're talking about Maelstrom of War. There's a stratagem, I think it's two command points at the beginning of the battle: I don't reveal my cards to you. So you've got no idea what my objectives are.
It keeps in that kind of guerrilla war.
Yeah, that's the kind of way the cults play. So
they don't deploy on the table. You've got no idea what their objectives are.
Exactly. How great is that?
Just shoot them. Just shoot them, Jay.
Yeah, just kill them. So yeah, my third choice is the Gene Silver cults. Your third choice, Jay?
My third choice is finally, after a long wait, unfortunately, it's come a bit too late because we sort of got over this little bit of hype, and then we've not tailed off, we've not really touched it again since, but it was finally the Blood Angels got rules for Horus Heresy.
Yeah.
Sanguinius got rules and a model for Horus Heresy, so this was the
Malevolence,
which is
book 8,
is it?
Book 8 of the Horus Heresy series, yeah, and this also has the Demons of the Ruinstorm army list.
Demons of the Ruinstorm, which are new demons, not Khorne, Slaanesh, Siege, they're like...
They're pure primordial...
Yeah.
Demonic evil,
a new
aren't
demonic
they?
Faction, and White Scars. And we see some Ace models for the White Scars as well. Yeah. The White Scars Terminator's very nice. So yeah, it's just good to finally get rules for the Blood Angels Legion. But like I say, unfortunately, that ship sort of sailed for us because 8th edition has come out, and we've not really had the drive to get back and play some Horus Heresy games.
Yeah, the last Heresy that we played was Inferno. With Magnus and the Sisters of Silence and the Custodes.
Space Wolves, yeah. I mean, we did have a good game of Warhammer World a couple of years ago, but this was when we all had Legions starting out, but only a few of us had Primarchs and things like that.
Yeah, I've read some news recently that the Horus Heresy series is going, you know, contrary to rumours on the internet, it isn't dying. They are looking at putting out new ways of getting into the game, so like battle boxes and new plastic kits and stuff. Now, that might be a good way of jumping back into the Heresy for us.
Yeah, cool. Your third choice, Matt?
Well, as I tend to try and do on these, picking a book from each system where I can. And my number three is a book that I always wanted back in the day and never bought it at the time, but then got redone this year. And that is The Scouring of the Shire.
Ah, yes.
Allowing you to play the only army that you need to play for Lord of the Rings, with many, many 4-point hobbits.
Filthy hobbitses.
And yeah, it's a really good book. It's got like 20 odd missions on it.
Yeah.
None of them need a massive playing surface to play them. No. If you play through the scenarios, you don't need a load of models. No. Obviously, you've got the full army list if you're mental and you want to take 700 points of hobbits to a tournament.
Yeah.
But critically, they can take Gandalf now without breaking allegiance. So that eats into some points, which is good.
Guy with the good fireworks.
Yeah, you'd have to take him on his horse and cart.
Yeah.
I like some of the kits that came out with this release was pretty cool. The Hobbit Hole.
And what's really good about this book is that it has a quite meaty hobby section telling you exactly how to build a Hobbit Hole and all the materials needed, how to make your trap markers. I really like that.
I think for a second, I thought you were how to build your own Hobbit Hole, like real life Hobbit Hole.
Yes.
What's going on in Matt's garden?
Yeah.
Excellent. My second choice, last year we played an awful lot of Age of Sigmar. Like, it took over our hobby time massively. And a big part of that was this year's General's Handbook. I didn't want to mention it too much while Jay was waxing lyrical about it earlier on, but I think it's been the best supplement this year. I think it's better than Chapter Approved.
Yeah.
I think, like you say, at the time, it really revitalised armies that were still waiting for new battle tomes, including the Aurochs.
Yeah.
Got the teleport spell, that's ace. The new rules, brilliant.
You could really tell they'd listened to community feedback. All the guys involved, go to events, they listen to the community.
Yeah.
They've fixed things that maybe didn't work in the previous one. Made battle plans that were good even better.
Yeah. And I think the fact that every time we've played a game out of General's Handbook, it has been close.
Yeah.
It has swayed back and forth. Brilliant. And that, you know, and that's even if you're talking Slaanesh versus, you know, Caesar Sigma. They always seem to be, you know, you're always in with a shot.
Well, that's it. Even if it's a massacre, the points are normally very, very close.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's cute. I think that's the sign of a great book.
Yeah.
And some other great content in there as well. But I think primarily it was the updates to old books and the new battle plans that really won it for me with that book. Your second choice, Jay?
My second choice is the Gloomspite Gits. Such a fun army book. Really cool. Really exciting to play with. Lots of cool, tricky sort of like tactics you can use in it. Really cool model release that came out of it. Some new background, which is really cool. I really like the Gloomspites army book. I think it's just a fun army book.
Yeah.
Fun battle tomb.
Quite meaty rules-wise, isn't it? It's not great for new people, but if you like having all your little different synergies and stuff, then it's a fantastic book, isn't it?
There's some cool mechanics about the moon.
Yeah, the moon moving across the board and dropping bits of like meteorite down on the board.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I like it.
Yeah, that's ace.
The big scenery piece, the Loon Shrine.
One of the best scenery pieces, yeah, I think, for Sigmar.
Yeah, I think unfortunately it's not quite as powerful as the books that have followed it. Though I think they have had some points discounts, haven't they, in Chapter Proof?
Yeah, they did, yeah. I like it. It's quite a well sort of, it's just a fun battle tome. Yeah, it's not the strongest book on the block, but it's really interesting. You'll not be bored playing with it.
It's got squigs.
It's got squigs. It's got squigs. Bounders, yeah.
Matt, your second choice.
Well, my second choice that we talked about last week, and that is the Sisters of the Battle.
Yeah.
It's been a long time coming, this book.
It has.
We saw the Sisters of Battle back in second edition, and they got kind of folded into the Inquisition, didn't they? Editions later, and this is the first proper full-on Sisters of Battle book since then, which is, what, 20-odd years later?
And boy, is it a good book.
Yeah, they've blown it away. It's just so cool. There's so much... The whole Miracle Dice thing is a great system. It's got elements of the Tzeentch Destiny Dice in there, but it fits the theme of the army. That this is like divine inspiration, mm-hmm. them getting that Overwatch shot or guaranteeing that this shot's going to finish off the tank, which counters the fact that they are quite fragile. I think they're going to be a bit of a glass cannon. They are in power armor, but they're only toughness 3, so they're going to be easy to wound.
At least you've got quite a few invulnerable saves.
And stackable invulnerable saves.
And feel no pain. I don't think they're going to be as weak as you think. I think they're going to be quite a solid army.
Easy to wound, but you're not necessarily going to get through their armor.
Yeah. And there's a lot of them to wound.
Yeah.
You know, you're basically running like an Imperial Guard army, but with 3+ armor.
And lots of flamers.
So
it looks a really, really fun book. I haven't managed to have a game with them yet because I've only recently built them all up. And I think going into the new year, we're going to see a lot of Sisters of Battle on the table.
I think we will.
This had a kind of a joint tie with the Space Marine book because that just got me really excited about playing Space Marines again. But I think the Sisters of Battle just kind of tipped it for my 40k choice for this list.
Fair enough. We're already round to our top choices. There is absolutely zero surprise what my top choice is. It is a battle tome from Age of Sigmar. It is Auruk Warclans. I am so deep into Auruks at the moment in playing with them. I mean, I'm going to be playing with Ogres in the new year, but I still think there's going to be part of me that's like, I want to get the Iron Jaws back out. I want to get the Big War back out.
Hashtag Uruk Undercrackers.
Uruk Undercrackers. They updated the War Scrolls. There were a couple of things that were kind of meh, but it was completely outweighed by the improvements they made, the War Chanters getting all their different beats.
Yeah.
The way that they brought Bone Splitters and Iron Jaws together to make the Big War. First of all, I stupidly just dismissed it. I don't think it'll really work for me. I think you'll miss smashing and bashing. But then when you look away rounds of getting Mighty Destroyers into your list and working out how you can build up those points, and once you start getting +1 to hit, +1 to wound,
yeah,
your army is nails. 6+ feel no pain on all your Iron Jaws units.
It's a massive force multiplier. But you can still play pure Iron Jaws or pure Bone Splitters if you so wish.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's you know, three lists in one, really.
You're spoiled for choice when it comes to artifacts and different mount traits for your Maw Crusher. Yes, we mentioned this earlier on the podcast. I'm not so fussed about endless spells, but I was really gutted that we didn't get a scenery piece. A lot of people said online, would a scenery piece work for the Auruks? Is it, you know, the charging up the battlefield? Do they really need something that may hold them back?
Even if it was just a totem that generated wire points or something.
Yeah, I would like to have seen them have a mechanic where they can raise the opponent's scenery pieces.
Yeah.
Do you like them marauding through that?
They have Gordrak can, if he charges a unit that's in cover,
yeah,
there's a chance he might destroy that terrain.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. But I think that's limited to just Gordrak.
Yeah. To level the playing field a bit.
A foot of Gorkendler spell would have been cool.
Smashing
would have been cool.
And not to forget all the lore and stuff that came in the book. So it talks. I've not really read much about bone splitters, but they were dead interesting to read about. How, you know, an orc becomes a bone splitter. You know, he's born and he's born a bit like mental, so he ends up going off on his own.
Born a bit mental.
And joins a group of the differences in the war, like they both love a war, but the energy of which that's generated is very different between the two armies, but it all works when they're thrown together to make the big war. So I think fantastic book, really powerful army, love it.
Awesome.
Your top choice, Jay?
My top choice is, when it finally arrived, the Sylvaneth army book.
Yay!
really cool. I mean, the Sylvaneth, the original Sylvaneth battle tome was one of the first of the new breed of battle tomes with their own spell lore, their own artifacts. So it was due a bit of a refresh, and it was great. I love using it. It changed the army quite a lot from how it used to play, for the better, in my opinion. Lots of different strategies and stuff became more useful. Your tree lords became a lot more powerful, which is a big part of the theme of the army.
Yeah.
I love the way some of the command abilities worked, which was very cool. They got the new character, they got the new endless spells, they got a new scenery piece. They've got two scenery pieces today. Yeah. Two scenery pieces. I love Sylvaneth. They were my first Age of Sigmar love, and I really like the second army book.
Awesome.
Excellent. And I love your Glade Worm. I think that's one of the best endless spells.
Yeah, the endless spells. Visually. They're like endless spites. Like
endless spites.
The realm of Geraint coming alive.
That's cool.
Your top choice, Matt?
Well, it only had to be one book, and my number one, and that is Cities of Sigmar.
Mm-hmm.
This, I was so looking forward to this book, and I was not disappointed. Being able to build whatever kind of order force that you want with a massive roster of units that you can use, with each of the cities giving you a different feel to that army as well. It's a bit cheesy, but it is kind of like 8 army list in one.
Yeah.
You know, it's
quite a big book, isn't it?
Yeah, big book, loads of units. Yeah, some of the older kits were discontinued, which is a shame.
It's quite a big call, really, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, it looks like the entirety of the kind of high elf range really was killed.
A lot of the wood elves, a lot of the Dwarden.
Yeah, some of the older Empire kits, but it works, and the army painted up in a coherent scheme worked as well, where I think there was some concerns that, is this just going to be a mismatch of different units?
And I actually think as well, it's two gifts in one, because yes, you can now create these, like you say, unified forces with the older models, but then the fact that they called a lot of these older models, that leads you to believe there's something in the pipeline, a reimagining of those races and those models.
I think we've said for a while, haven't we, that there is a big new human battle tome. It might be some time off, but it's coming.
I can see there being a human faction.
I can see there being a human faction next year, an elf faction next year, and a Dwarden faction.
Sigmarite priests or something, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the Excelsior war priest is a good example of what I think will look like.
You know, I think a Age of Sigmar analogue of the Sisters of Battle would be cool.
Yeah. And I liked how they integrated the Stormcast into Sigmar.
Yeah, and the stuff like the Caradhran Overlords and the Sylvaneth. You know, there's so many options for armies. It's really cool. And yeah, that is my shout out for the year. Cities of Sigmar, best book.
Brilliant. Sorry, excuse me. My time to get a coughing fit. So that is our top three. What we want to know is what your top threes have been. So we're going to take a short pause here, and then we're going to read out your choices. We have our data slates at the ready with this week's community top three picks. I'm going to start over on Facebook. Chris Spurgeon, my apologies if I've pronounced your surname wrong. His top three is the Cities of Sigmar, Codex Space Marines, and the Age of Sigmar gaming book.
That is a really good book. So yes, we didn't mention it is. This. So this brought in all the stuff from Malign Sorcery into the main rulebook.
So you've got all your different realms, spells, artifacts, all your battle plans from General's Handbook.
General's Handbook, yeah, and the core rules.
Yeah, all in a little handy tournament-sized booklet. Daz Brain says, I'd like to have said Legion of Legion of the Chaos Dwarfs.
Asgore.
All Chaos Dwarfs, but I'll wait another year, I guess. Think my favourite three have to be Flesh Eater Courts Battletome. Mm. I did have a bit of a flirtation with them.
You did, yeah. Year.
Gloomspike Gits, one of your choices, Jake. Yep. And all of the Trog goodness. And finally, I think the Ogre Moor Tribes. So actually, he's got four in there. Oh, well, Trogs are with the Gloomspites. And Ogre Moor Tribes was a good book.
It was, yeah.
Getting that at Christmas. So that's Facebook. Over to you, Matt.
Cool. Well, on Twitter, we've got Mike Servoarm with the Renegade Knights Codex, the Sisters Codex, and Vigilus Ablaze.
Mm. Vigilus Ablaze, yeah, I forgot about that. That was with the chaos stuff on it.
Abaddon came out, didn't it? Yeah. Andy Wood says Fire Slayers, because dwarfs. Vigilus Ablaze Part 1 and 2. I think Part 1 came out in December, but we'll let you off, Andy. And Ogres.
Of course. Says,
Fabius Fulgrim, Codex Chaos Knights. Codex Sisters of Battle, and no surprise here, Head Knights of Slaanesh. Mm-hmm. Pete Allison says Battletome Cities of Sigmar. Aeronautica Rinsworld, now this was the expansion that came out at the same time. And Forbidden Power, without a doubt a fantastically inspiring and interesting book. I quite like that it took part in like a shard of a realm, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
A new place to explore with its own realm traits and stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll see more of that in the future.
Yeah.
Ross Polly says Warcry the Anthology, Gloomspite, and Ossiarch Bone Reapers. Sombermine, did not buy all the books, but Cities of Sigmar is my first pick because it's fun and refreshing. Yeah. And it's an awesome book.
Yeah.
Violet Sun, definitely only had a thorough look at relatively few of the releases. I really like the Ultramarine supplement. Vigilus Ablaze had some cool new stuff in it. Demon Hammer says the Sisters of Battle Codex, the Iron Hand supplement, and Cities of Sigmar. And Ropehooks says Battletome Ossiarch Bone Reapers, Spike! Journal 7, and Battletome Head Knights of Slaanesh. Mm. So, yeah, some good choices there.
Some very good choices. Which one was Spike Volume 7?
Halflings, maybe?
It might have been. Potentially. Apologies if we're wrong, but
it would be Halflings or the Lizardmen. I want to say Halflings. Yeah.
There was Wood Elves had a Spike issue this year as well.
It is a Blood Bowl team of some description.
Thank you for all your top threes. Matt, what is next week's top three?
Well, next week is the last show of the year.
Wow.
Mental.
We're going to be having a look at the new Chaos Slaves of Darkness book. We'll be talking about our battle on Warhammer TV.
The victory for the Art of Warclans.
Maybe. But to end the year, it had to be one choice for a top three. It's not a top three at all. We want to know your favourite sprue and your favourite brew.
It's a classic. Great way to see out the year. I suppose we've got so many new sprues.
Yeah.
Potentially some new brews.
Maybe. We should have a little assortment of tea bags or something to try at the end of the show.
Definitely. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. We hope you'll join us for our final podcast of the year next week. And then I think we have a week off then, don't we, usually, to see out 2019.
Giving us a week off.
You got a week off, yeah. Because I think it'll be Boxing Day, won't it? Or is it Christmas Day?
No, Boxing Day, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So next week's might be a little bit later just because of scheduling, but there'll be a show before Christmas. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. So thank you for listening. Please do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll be back again very, very soon.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. If you like what you've been listening to, please do give us a share and a comment if you're listening via Apple Podcasts. For further content, please check out spruesandbrews.com, and you can contact us on Twitter at spruesandbrews or over on Facebook, facebook.com/spruesandbrews.